admit it. It still hurts.
Welcome back to The Adventures of Bradley and Dawn, My Talk 107.1. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully you listened to our riveting broadcast from App Madness yesterday in the noon hour. If you missed it, you can listen to it in podcast form. Just search our show name wherever you get your podcasts. And then Blinded by the Item as well. Like and subscribe. Okay, we have to talk about a new type of technology that a company that Elon Musk started in 2016. They have been working on, the company is Neuralink, and they have been working on this type of brain implant, a chip that can help people who are suffering from different brain injuries or maybe paralysis to be able to do things. And the patient number one, which is usually used in a term of like the first person to get a terrible disease, but in this case, this is an amazing thing that has happened. A guy named Noland Arbaugh, he's 29 years old. He is a quadriplegic, and he went under the knife for this. He said, I will be the first patient to try this. Well, there's been some video released, which, you know, it's a visual thing. You can watch it on our show links page. But he had a freak diving accident about 8 years ago and it left him paralyzed from the shoulders down. Then he heard about Neuralink and what they were trying to do. And so he signed up and said, please let me be a test subject. So now, because of this chip in his brain, they have video of him actually moving a mouse around on a laptop that's set up in front of him, and he's playing chess.
That's pretty awesome.
So awesome. I mean, this guy, his life completely changed, and now he has the opportunity to do things for himself. And he also, like, he had some music playing on his laptop as the video is going, and the interviewer said, hey, can you turn down that music just for our video so that it's not so much as loud in the background? He's like, sure. And he just turns the volume down by thinking about it.
Oh, wow.
It's just like, wow.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And this is what Elon
Musk has
been working on. I don't
understand how that works. Is that real?
It is. It seems to be real. It's what they've been working on.
We can't tell if Kate Middleton video is real, but somehow a guy can think the volume down.
Think the volume down and play chess. And although, who knows what else in the future.
This is one of those stories where I'm grateful for all of those individuals, like the patient you just talked about, who are able to do things they weren't previously able to do. I just hope that this is not going to then turn into something that people who have the abilities to do things will then want to use. So as you know what I mean, like I'm over here in the worst case scenario village.
Yes.
That's where I live most days, where I think of like, how are they going to use this technology for evil?
And if Elon Musk is involved,
I mean,
it's likely.
You can assume it's going to be used for evil.
Right.
But I am glad for the sake of the patients who are able to now do things.
Yes. So this was their first clinical trial, and it looks like it's going well so far for him. And he's absolutely so delighted. He says that it's changed his life. Even this small, you know, thing that's been happening so far, you know, it seems small to other people, but it's really opened up, and he's so excited about it. And then I started to think about, well, what was Stephen Hawking doing? Because he had ALS and he was speaking through a computer, and I thought maybe that was through a chip. Also, I just wanted to know what technology, and it had to do with him, his cheek movement.
Yeah. So, like, because there's facial movements or eye movements that they can use. I know that.
Right. So I had to, I just looked up the difference between that, if you were wondering. And then really thinking about, okay, Elon Musk, we have these stories. This is fantastic. I don't want to take away from that at all. Okay. However, I think a lot of times, you know, Elon Musk can be more than problematic and just not very socially. His EQ is very low, I would say. Not his IQ, but his emotional intelligence. And so he seems like an evil villain. But then we have articles like this where it's like Elon Musk is, you know, changing people's lives. And I think his money is changing people's lives.
Yeah.
But I just want to, I'm always thinking about, like, well, who are the scientists that actually develop this? Because
the science is actually changing people's lives. And the science, and it's no small thing that his money is affording that science, but it's truly the science that's the reason.
And I think that people equate him to actually developing the Tesla, actually developing this. And so they think of him as like, well, he's a genius. And so he can get away with behaving badly. And it's, you know, it's just when you read a headline and you see Elon Musk shows off this Neuralink thing, he didn't make it up himself. There are seven scientists and one doctor in particular who developed all of this in the first place is a Pakistani-born Canadian neuroscientist named Naweed Syed. So these are the people that are behind the scenes that are actually doing the work to create this.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really cool. I hope that this becomes something that's affordable to people. So this is in early development and what it can lead to. Like you said, I hope it's going to be for something good.
Yeah. Well, and there's a reason it's a trial, because you got to make sure that thing actually works. I mean, early tests or results are seemingly good, but I imagine you want to make sure all sorts of different scenarios are explored so that you don't end up, you know, like, you can turn down the volume, but you can also set off nuclear war. Let's maybe make sure you can't, you know, accidentally set off a microwave when you walk by. Right? Like, there's all sorts of things I'm sure they want to make sure.
And everyone's body is different. So, yeah. So it's working well for this one individual. And I think it's amazing. So,
oh, absolutely. A wonderful story. Thank you, Dawn, for that update. When we come back, I hear you also have an update on Blanket versus Catherine.
Yes.
You might not understand what that means to your listener, but she's going to explain. It actually involves two people, and one of them is not Kate Middleton. We'll tell you who that Catherine is and the blanket when we return right here on My Talk.
107.1.
It's Dawn McClain for David from First Equity Mortgage. Are you thinking about buying a home, maybe upgrading? Maybe you've had a life change and you want to downsize? Well, look no further than David from First Equity for your mortgage. It's a great time to buy a home, especially with David and his team. And if you've ever had a situation in the past with your mortgage company where you don't know what you're signing, what documents you're supplying, don't worry. David prides himself and his team on prompt responses, explaining the process and even helping first-time home buyers get their ducks in a row. Customers Cassie and Vic say best in the business, smoothest home purchase ever. And David handled absolutely everything he could, and we fully trusted him from start to finish. An 11 out of 10 rating. Wow. If you're thinking about refinancing, we did that with David a couple of years ago, and we're so happy with David and the experience. He was there every step of the way, keeping us updated. So do what dozens of My Talkers have done. Call David and his team, 763-251-8000, or My Talk, keyword David.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Dawn McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S., the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Blanket versus Catherine. Does that mean that a woman named Catherine is caught up in her blanket and she can't get out?
Is that why Kate Middleton's been gone?
Kate Middleton is trapped in a blanket. Nope, that's not what it is. Blanket Jackson is who we're talking about, which is Michael Jackson's youngest son, is not fighting with his grandmother, Catherine, but he's asked a judge to stop her from doing something. So he is against something, which is an appeal.
That's interesting. Where did this come about?
So it came about because the executors of the Michael Jackson estate who happened to be, they were named in 2002 by Michael Jackson. So his attorney and another person named John McLean, no relation to me, but they were put in charge of his estate if he were to pass.
Okay.
So that's what a judge determined when Michael Jackson passed in 2009. And they're responsible for, since they were, all of his kids were minors, they were responsible for allocating the funds and, you know, as an executor would do. Well, earlier last year, they were going to sell half of Michael Jackson's music catalog for $600 million, which
is a lot of money.
Is a lot of money. And Blanket and Michael Jackson's mother, Catherine, actually wanted to stop the executors of Michael Jackson's estate from going through with this big transaction. They were very much against it. And so it ended up being that they lost their case. So they sold or are going to sell half of Michael Jackson's music catalog.
That's crazy that they can do that.
I know. I was trying to sort of find out what kind of control people like that have, but it was Michael's wishes that they would control his money. And then he allocated like 20%. I want to go to these charities, 20% for undisclosed things. And then there are the trusts that are set up for the children.
Yeah.
So Michael Jackson had almost $600 million. You know, he had money and assets, and then he had just money when he passed. Now, he also had $331 million in debt. So
that's
a lot of $331 million in debt.
Like, why? I wonder where that debt came from.
He had a net worth of $236.6 million, $567 million in assets. That included Neverland Ranch. If you remember, they tried to sell for a very long time.
Yeah.
And
so it's like real estate?
Yes. And then he also had his 50% share of Sony ATV Music Publishing's catalog. But then he had these debts.
Okay.
So to pay off the debts, I'm assuming that's what they're doing with this money, selling Neverland Ranch and, you know, trying to make sure that the kids have money in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that that's their best interest. Who knows with these kind of things. But in the long run, Blanket and Catherine were trying to stop them from selling half of Michael's music catalog. They lost their case, and Blanket says he doesn't want to appeal the ruling.
So Catherine wants to appeal. He doesn't.
He doesn't. So he asked the judge, hey, most importantly, I am fine with my grandmother appealing this. I don't want to have anything to do with it. But can she use her own money? Mm. Because she gets seven figures, some type of a seven-figure amount every year from the estate. And so use your own money if you want to appeal, not the estate money, because that's my money in the future. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is what's going on between them. I don't know if it's caused a huge rift, you know?
And who's telling him? Don't, you know, like, that? This all just seems like, again, lawyers making so much money because family, you know, the individual family members sit around and talk about all these things, or do they have lawyers in their ear going, okay, you're going to need to do this because this, and not saying that the lawyers aren't giving good advice. I'm just saying it seems like a lot of this is probably machinations behind the scene on the hands of, at the hands of lawyers who are trying to, you know, maneuver things because you have different money interests. Catherine, of course, has a funnel of money. The kids have a funnel of money.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, it's just like, I really feel for however you feel about Michael Jackson, which I'm not a fan of anymore after seeing Leaving Neverland, completely changed my mind about Michael Jackson, but that's beside the point. I feel for these kids, you know, their whole childhood before he passed away was literally like they were wearing masks. They couldn't have a life in the public because Michael Jackson was so afraid of showing their faces that they had to live a life that was, it's already unusual you're the son of Michael or the daughter of Michael Jackson. And yeah. so you're traveling the world. It's a strange childhood. It might be seen as like, well, what's the problem? They're so wealthy. It must have been great. I don't know. You know, I don't know if having a kid be covered up all the time and not, it was his choice. And I understand that. But then you notice after he passed, they're like, can we please just walk around without a mask on? And then it was a big deal. People were really upset that these kids were allowed to be seen, but it was obviously their choice or, you know, someone's choice who thought it was in their best interest. Like, yeah, we can take the masks off now, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to know if these kids, like, who has their best interest at heart, because all I imagine a lot of people see when they see these kids is dollar signs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it's hard to know if anybody has their best interest at heart. You yeah. would hope that the family would, but look, money makes family do weird stuff.
It's true. It really is.
Like, people would be like, oh, well, you would never do anything. Well, okay.
And Catherine, even, it's hard to, you know, sometimes you question her motives because she was removed from, you know, she was their guardian. So that is what Michael wanted. And so she was taking care of them and, of course, all of their expenses and money. And so she was upset when she was not allowed to be their guardian anymore. Mm. I think what happened was that Paris ended up aging out of that and said, I'll be their guardian, from what I remember.
Yeah.
So she wasn't happy about that. Just the overall, like, fight for what happens with Michael Jackson's money. It's just, at this point, I feel like the kids should just be in control of it. I don't know if we need Catherine Jackson involved. She already gets a paycheck, you know, for essentially doing nothing.
You're trying
nothing.
To take Catherine's money away?
I'm not trying to take her money away, but she has it. I think she's fine. And then you think about, okay, his brothers and sisters, are they involved? You know, what's LaToya doing? What's Janet doing? What's the rest of them? And the only one I can remember is Tito right now.
Why? What's he doing?
What is his brothers and sisters?
No, Tito. You said the only one you know right now is Tito.
The only name that comes to mind is Tito.
And why does it come to mind?
I'm just trying to name Michael Jackson's siblings.
Oh.
That's
I thought
all.
Maybe you had some, like, particular fascination with Tito.
No. No. Not unless you're talking about the liquor. I mean, you used to love Tito's, but other than that, no.
We ended up on Tito's Liquors.
Yeah. What do you think about it? What do you think about all of this?
Not a fan. But what I will say is, I think, again, like I said, when you have this much money, you have to be very, very, like, skeptical of why people are doing certain things.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would assume it's always going to end up being about the money.
Oh, yeah. Honey. And, you know, I'm sure that they're, whatever deal works best for them in the long run, what's ever going to make them the most money, the lawyers, that's what they're going to push through.
Well, and Dawn, thank you for that update on Blanket versus Catherine. When we come back, it is a full review of Quiet on the Set. Maybe you've heard about this four-part docu-series about the kids from Nickelodeon shows. Dawn has a review for us. I know Mike watched a bit of it, so we're going to talk about that when we return right here on My Talk 107.1.
Entertainment.
Hey, my talkers, Bradley here for my good friends at Dakota Dental. Make sure you've called and made your appointment for your regular checkup. If you haven't done that in a while, it's totally understandable. It happens. Life gets away from us. You know, there are holidays or life just gets busy. Many excuses. It's fine. You're not going to be judged if you're overdue for an appointment when you call Dakota Dental. You're really just going to be getting some of the best dental care in the Twin Cities. I can say that because that's been my experience over the last, oh gosh, I can't even think about how many years it's been. Several years since I have been a patient at Dakota Dental, and each and every time I'm sitting in that chair, I know I'm getting some of the best dental care. Why? Well, because my checkups go great. I do what they recommend. When I've had procedures done, for example, most recently my implant, everything went smoothly. I was super happy with the results. I could not recommend Dakota Dental more highly. Call DakotaDental.com today, and don't forget to tell them Bradley sent you.
It is 29 and cloudy here at My Talk.
Welcome back to the show. The Adventures of Bradley and Dawn right here on My Talk 107.1. All right, let's talk about a documentary that was pretty disturbing, but I think it's important for people to watch this documentary just so you can see behind the scenes what happened at Nickelodeon in the 90s, early 2000s. Dan Schneider is one of the biggest, he created many, many shows on Nickelodeon, and there's a documentary on ID channel, which you can watch on Discovery Plus or Max, either one, and it's called Quiet on the Set. Mike has watched a couple of episodes. There's four total. I've watched the whole thing now.
Yeah, so how did you find out about this? I know people have been talking about it, or what intrigued you to this particular documentary?
Well, there were some ads that they started to run for it, and they were... I can't remember where I saw the ads, but it was just like maybe a TMZ article, just like interviewing people on the show that were a part of the show, like assistant directors and things, and some of the stars from the old shows that are now adults. And it just seemed like they were talking about a toxic environment. And I knew about Dan Schneider in the past, and he created all these shows. And just from reading Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died, learning about him. She was sort of, I would say, the whistleblower. She named him as the creator, but it was pretty clear in her book who she was talking
about. And Blind Items have talked about Dan Schneider and his creepy ways for years. He's been the subject of Blind Items. He actually has tried to like rehab his image since then, I would say unsuccessfully, but we'll talk about that more. So the documentary, four parts on ID, Discovery Plus. What did you think of it?
I thought it was really well done. I was surprised at, you know, this isn't just like two kids talking about an experience. Several kids who were involved with those shows made an appearance as adults, and what it did to them.
And these are kids on
Nickelodeon shows. Yes. And so the environment overall, then you had staff writers, women being treated way differently than men. The comments he would make, devaluing them, you know, it really, kids who were in the process of auditioning, even parents, very extensive amount of people, just nobody saying good things about this.
Like, give me an example of like some of the things like they would say about him.
Okay.
Or the environment that he created.
Well, there was just a level of toxicity and fear on the set. So he had a way of, he joked around a lot, but then it would put people in positions to agree to do things that they would never do. You know, like, someone's telling a story in the writer's room about like, oh, I, you know, because they talked about like middle school and high school because that's what they're writing for. And one of the female writers told a story and he said, you know, what would be great is if you would bend over the table right now, tell the story the same story. It would be hilarious and act like you're, you know, being assaulted essentially.
Oh, God.
And there was so much pressure and threats and all of this weird environment that he created that people ended up doing things that they were like, I feel like, you know, they're now crying about it and saying how bad it was. And, you know, that's just the adults. When it comes to the kids, it's the writing. There were so many sexual innuendo jokes on those shows that it's like, okay, dude. He also got massages every day from female staff members. He would like call someone away from their job and say, I need a massage on set. And so every day he had a different woman massaging him.
Okay, that's creepy.
That's, you know, in the Me Too movement, that's whenever that came out and people were like, that's wrong. So I have a clip of Dan Schneider. He's watched the show. And his response is, the first part of it you hear him talking about are the massages, just the massages, and how I regret doing that. I shouldn't have done that. Then he goes into this talk about how this is edited down. But the second part is him talking about how all of his scripts were approved by higher ups, and like any skimpy clothes or jokes or anything, everyone approved him. So it's a non-apology.
So this is Dan responding to the documentary.
That
this is not
correct.
The documentary itself.
He's not, yes. Yeah. So just take a listen. The first part is about the massages. The second part is about the content.
watching over the past two nights was very difficult. Me facing my past behaviors, some of which are embarrassing and that I regret. And I definitely owe some people a pretty strong apology. It was wrong that I ever put anybody in that position. It was the wrong thing to do. I'd never do it today. I'm embarrassed that I did it then. I apologize to anybody that I ever put in that situation. And even additionally, I apologize to the people who were walking around Video Village or wherever they happened, because there were lots of people there who witnessed it who also may have felt uncomfortable. So I owe them an apology as well.
Yeah.
Every one of those jokes was written for a kid audience because kids thought they were funny and only funny. Okay? Now we have some adults looking back at them 20 years later through their lens, and they're looking at them and they're saying, oh, you know, I don't think that's appropriate for a kid show. And I have no problem with that. If that's how anyone feels, let's cut those jokes out of the show. We had executives in LA. We had executives in New York.
So two coasts.
Two coasts of approval. Coasts. Yes. And by the way, approval at every stage, really. Okay. And I'm talking about wardrobe. I'm talking about makeup, sound, sets, dialogue, jokes, everything. And we're also shooting it in front of all sorts of adults and caregivers and the set teacher and the families. Everybody's watching it. And if anybody had said anything, hey, we don't like that, that's not appropriate, then it would have been cut out.
So that's him like pushing back against the documentary.
That's him pushing back against all. It sounds to me like he's not accepting responsibility at all. You created the jokes. You were the head writer. You're the showrunner. You created that. That's all your ideas. And so even though people weren't looking as closely as they should, you're still not claiming responsibility for doing, having kids do seemingly sexual things on camera, like preteens. It's disgusting. But he's not owning that. He's saying everybody was there. That's because he was like a fear monger, creating an environment where people were so intimidated. And he created this godlike type of a, I don't know how to describe it. You'll just have to watch. But people were scared to go against him. And you had to be in his favorite. The kids were like, I had to be his favorite. You know, these adults saying like, you had to, if he, you know, didn't talk to you that day, and like, he would come up and scare us. And I mean, just Mike, what do you feel about hearing him say that?
Yeah, I just think it's completely ridiculous, because a lot of these jokes kids don't get. Like the biggest character on the Amanda show that she really ran with, the name was Penelope Taint. And like it was a play off of that. And when asked about it, he's like, no, it's like if you taint something or whatever. He starts gaslighting people and saying, why would you take it that way? That's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, to expect that kids would have the sense like, oh, kids thought these jokes were funny. I mean, no offense, but kids will think anything's funny if you tell them it's funny.
And if you haven't watched the video of Ariana Grande trying to, what they say is, squeeze the juice out of a potato and like then lay on her back in a bed and dump water all over her face.
Oh, God.
It's like, these aren't situations where it's, oh, it's obviously a funny joke for kids, but parents just are now taking it the wrong. No, these are pretty blatant. I mean, we know what these jokes are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty simple. And not to mention the type of people that he allowed to work there and basically created an environment that they could, because Don hasn't even got to the fact that there's legitimately two pedophiles on hand.
That were a part of
that were a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And were they like caught during the, I mean, like during their time there? How did we find that out?
Yes. You find that out because, you know, a mother speaks out for her daughter, her 8-year-old, and what happened to her, and how it just completely destroyed her desire to be in the business. And like, it's just, it's so sad. And then, of course, Drake Bell. That's a huge part of the last two episodes is his. It will break your heart.
Yeah.
You know, I do know about the things that he's been involved with. He had some online flirting with an underage person. And
I
do know.
12-year-old?
Well, the situation is that the girl said, because he's also a musician. So the girl said she was 15 and she was 12. And then after 3 years, he wanted to meet up with her thinking she was 18. Still isn't right for a 30-year-old guy to be talking to a girl of that age. But at the same time, you can sort of see, and what his life became after his experiences, which are absolutely the worst thing you could think of that someone could do to someone. I'll just say that. So, and you might think, I don't want to watch this, but man, these people have gotten away with just living their lives after this, and I think they should be held accountable.
And I think that's the biggest reason why people should watch it is because, I mean, we're at a different level right now as a society, but also the fact that, like he said in that quote, there are parents, there are caregivers, there are people around watching these things happening, but whether it was not wanting to be in the way of your child's future or not wanting to,
or
whatever.
Or wanting your child's future to go, you know, like in a certain direction, you might be predisposed to keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did. So people like this still exist, and they still are in environments like this. It might not be explicit as this, but this still happens to this day. And I think people need to watch it to actually see what this looks like, and a really good example of, always stay vigilant, especially when kids are involved.
Well, that's, you've definitely, what's that?
I said absolutely.
Yeah, well, you've definitely given people a reason to watch Quiet on the Set. Again, it's a 4-part documentary on Discovery, or you can watch it through Max. That's
Max
where you watched it.
Max or Discovery, yep.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that update. And you put links to...
I did. There are links to the full interview that Dan Schneider did. It's like a 20-minute thing. So you can be more disgusted with his answers. Yeah.
I hate to take us in a different direction.
Oh,
actually,
but please
I'm
do.
Very excited to take us in a different direction because it has nothing to do with the story we just talked about, even though it was a very important one. It does have to do with Kathy Griffin and her disappearing husband. Kate Middleton is not the only person who has disappeared from public view. I'll tell you about Kathy Griffin's estranged, mysteriously nowhere husband person when we come back right here on My Talk.
Where is Kathy Griffin's missing husband? Her estranged husband. Bradley has all the details. Right here on My Talk 107.1, The Adventures of Bradley and Dawn. What's going on?
Okay, so we just need to have a little lighthearted story. So we're going to talk about Kathy Griffin's disappearing ex-husband, but not ex-husband, because she's trying to divorce this man and has been trying to do so apparently since December when she filed for divorce after 4 years of marriage. Now, look, I love Kathy Griffin, but she's a lot. And while her comedy often has me in stitches, sometimes... she's just a complicated person.
Yeah, she
put
goes
it like
a little
that.
Too far sometimes. Yeah, obviously.
And she has been
knows
very
about the biggest thing.
Well, in the controversy that sort of tanked her career when she held up, you know, a head of a president. You guys know all that. Yeah. Anyway, so very controversial figure. But look, as a member of the world of pop culture, Kathy Griffin has been around for a while. And we've talked about her for years. So when I saw this story, I was like, I need to understand what's going on with Kathy, because court documents that were obtained by People show that she has been trying to find her ex, but not ex-husband yet, hopefully soon ex-husband. She's been trying to find him to serve him divorce papers.
Yeah.
But hasn't been able to. Why? Because he has disappeared.
What?
He remains in hiding. And I'm like, why does this guy have to be in hiding? Apparently, Randy Bick has
famous
just,
for making Bick pens.
Yes,
Go
he
on.
Is the heir to the Bick fortune. Not at all. his whereabouts remain unknown. Now, Kathy Griffin asked him to leave the house not 4 years ago. They got together 4 years ago. In December, she was like, bye.
Hmm.
Since then, he has not told her where he is. And so she has been trying to find him so that she can serve him papers, because you have to do that when you file for divorce, right? So because she hasn't been able to find him, she has gone so far as to hire a private investigator.
Well, that's too bad.
And the private investigator has not been able to find him. Where is Randy Bick? And why would you... I don't get, like, if you're like, okay, we're getting divorced... What is the benefit to, like, disappearing?
I don't know. I wonder if he's holding out because she might be doing something that would be community property to him. Like, maybe she has some financial venture that she wants to get into, or she wants to tour again or make a bunch of money, and he wants to stick around and not be divorced.
Well, and maybe it has, like, there's a money component that we're not thinking about, because we're not super rich like these people. And there's a prenuptial agreement. And part of this paperwork that she's trying to file to get the divorce rolling is to enforce the prenuptial agreement to end spousal support, because obviously she was probably the breadwinner. I don't know what Mr. Bick did for a living, but I would imagine she was, even though she's been through some stuff, maybe she has some money. So maybe by him disappearing, he's still able to access that money or something. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. It's also strange to me because it's not the first time I've heard somebody escaping divorce papers. There should be a thing that's like, if we can't find you, it's not like, oh, we didn't. You should be able to get divorced if somebody disappears.
Well,
like, there should be a time period of like 3 months or whatever. Sorry.
And I think there is, and it just depends on your location. And I will say that this story goes on to talk about the fact that she has to then publicly make these statements. And then after a certain period of time, the court, I forget what they call it, when, you know, because like he could have, I mean, I'm assuming nothing bad happened to him, but let's say he fell off a cliff and just disappeared himself for good.
Uh-oh.
Right? Like
yeah.
That happens. He's, you know, on a hike. On a big mountain.
Yeah.
And maybe slipped.
Yeah.
And nobody saw. I mean, you can imagine where then he's just gone. So at a certain point, the court could rule like, okay, Kathy, through no fault of your own, you can get divorced. So I think that that is the process. So this is just one step along the way of getting there. But that's why I don't understand what the purpose of him disappearing himself, because if the court can ultimately just decide, okay, fine, you're divorced, even though He's
not been served papers in his hands.
Yeah, we'll let it go because maybe he got abducted by aliens. It's another possibility. Maybe he's in England taking care of Kate Middleton.
It all comes back around to Kate. Oh,
either of you have any clue as to what incentive someone would have?
Oh, I would think to hold out just to be vengeful if you don't want them to move on with their life. And you just want to cause them misery. You don't want to sign the papers. What about you, Mike?
I've fortunately never gone through anything like this, so I have no idea.
You've never been through a celebrity
divorce? No, I haven't. Tried to avoid it.
Or maybe they're getting together with someone else, and you don't want them to be able to get married because you're vindictive. Because they can't get married until they're divorced.
Yeah.
Maybe you still want to have access to their money.
Griffin will, quote, make further attempts to locate Bick and will now take step to enter his default. So I guess that would be the next step is default divorce.
Mm-hmm. You know who we should get on the line? Ann Tressler.
Ann Tressler, man. She'd find that.
She needs
dude.
To tell us what's going on. She actually would like, know everything.
She's like, he's behind a bush.
That's right. And also, these are the laws against him.
Can I just say, I love that there are private investigators in the world. That's just some badass stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like calling up, like I want to meet a private investigator.
I dated one.
And
it was, didn't go well.
Why?
Because when I decided to break up with him, he stayed in my life by stalking me legally.
Oh
God.
So they can be interesting individuals.
Okay. Tell me more.
He went into my house and like when we were dating because he was so suspicious of me and he was a controlling person who was verbally and physically abusive too.
Oh no.
So
that's terrible.
Like he meant like let me just yeah. So I'll just say like he, I knew he had been in my house because he mentioned to me like, hey, I had a big bunch of laundry on my bed one day, curtains closed, and I just dumped it there because I was like, I don't have time to fold this right now. He started to talk about, he like wanted to let me know that he had been in my house, just sort of in a threatening way. And these are like microaggressions. So at the time you're thinking, well, why wouldn't you leave or whatever? But he was like, you know, I dry clean all my clothes. Do you want me to just dry clean your clothes? I know you have a lot of laundry. And I'm like, oh, that's okay.
Weird.
So that, and then, you know, like a year later after, like I could, he would follow me. I would see him sitting outside a restaurant.
Oh my God, that's
where
terrifying.
I was. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
Oh, God. Okay.
So that's my, you asked and I gave you my answer. But yeah, private investigators can be ex-cops.
Maybe I don't want to meet private investigators.
They can be ex-cops who that didn't work out well for them. I'm not saying all private investigators are like this, please. This was just my one experience I had.
Yeah, because my idea of private investigator is like the sitcom private investigator who's like in a bush.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do? You're like, I got to go find people. I imagine in this day and age, almost anyone can be a private investigator. In fact, I have friends like they will say, like, I need to find out who this person is. And clickety clack within a few minutes on the Internet, they know everything about a person because information is like ubiquitous on all of us now at any given time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want to dig into someone's life, you're just curious. You know, you're like, wonder where my husband is right now. Your friend can go follow them. And, you know, there's some people that are like, we'll catch that husband or wife. Both parties cheat. But, you know, it's something that can be, or vetting people before you date them. There's a lot of information on the Internet now.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's like services you can pay money to that'll like do that entire thing. I imagine the old school private investigator with like a trench coat who's, you know, lurking around bushes. That's probably kind of an outdated archetype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the ways that they would find people that they're looking for are definitely
interesting. I used to have a little bit of an eye into that because when I worked for Target in their credit card division, we used to have connections with skip tracers.
Oh, and remind me what that is.
A whole profession of people. They are basically trying to trace. I don't know if this is where it comes from, but I always equated it to like trace people that have skipped out on a debt.
Oh, sure.
So like they're trying to find
debt
people who owe money.
Mm-hmm.
Who don't want to pay, because that used to be a lot easier, right? Mm-hmm. To avoid people finding you because you could kind of hide yourself. Now in this day and age, I don't imagine it's very easy to avoid a debt because again, anytime you do anything electronically, there's a signature.
That's true. Yes. Man, this went down a road, didn't it?
It did. Well, Kathy Griffin, I hope she finds her almost ex-husband so that they can become officially divorced. Good luck to you, ma'am.
Yeah.
When we come back here on The Adventures of Bradley and Dawn, from Kathy Griffin to Willy Wonka. Remember that scandal?
Oh.
Well, believe it or not, there is a full 45-minute documentary that tells the tale of...